Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Richard Cordero. He got his degree in law from the Sorbonne in Paris. He's gotten his MBA from the University of Michigan Business School, and he has a PhD in law from the University of Cambridge in England, and he is admitted to practice law in the second department here in New York, and he's a fellow New Yorker. Please say hello, Dr. Cordero. Hello? Hello?
Hi.
Can you hear? Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Good evening, Ms. Redding. Thank you so much for having me on the program.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So, you know, my listening audience knows that I've been talking about doing writs of prohibition when your adversary does not obtain jurisdiction, and we've been talking about crooked judges as well as crooked doctors, and I want to direct everyone's attention, if you go to Google Chrome, don't do this on your regular internet, but go to Google Chrome, and Dr. Cordero wants to direct your attention to a study that he did. Now, don't be intimidated, it's about 800 pages, but it's riveting reading, and he wants to direct your attention to page number OL347. Oh, well, let me give you if you go to Google Chrome, in your search bar, you want to type in, and next week when the chat room is up and running, because I understand that Rick and Annie just relocated, so they're getting up to speed, but next week when the live chat room is up and running, I'll post the link. So you want to go to Google Chrome and type in the search bar, judicial-reform.org/front-page/OL/Dr. Cordero. And Dr. Cordero's last name is Cordero_honest_JUD_advocates.pdf. And you will come to, I'll say it again, I know that was a mouthful. And you'll come to Dr. Cordero's work. And what he would like to do is tell us about, give us some more tools to fight a dishonest judiciary. Dr. Cordero, why don't you take the floor?
Thank you so much. Yeah, what I would like to do tonight is not to hold a conference on the law, but rather to direct the attention of your audience to how they can be more effective in confronting wrongdoing judges. And that is the first objective. And the second objective is how to inform the national public about judicial wrongdoing so that they are outraged and they force politicians, particularly presidential candidates, to take a stand on judicial wrongdoing. Now, it is important to consider those two objectives because what I intend to do is to be very pragmatic, to be helpful to the people that in most cases are confronting wrongdoing judges on their own as pro se parties. And the reason for that, this ever-growing number of pro ses, is that most people cannot afford to pay $200, $300, $400, $500, even $600 an hour to an attorney, so they are forced to represent themselves, and when they do that, they are easy prey. So lawyers and judges take advantage of that and abuse them. Now, what wrongdoing judges mean is that the judges disregard the facts of the case and the applicable law and do whatever they do because they can get away with it. That is what my study of judges and the judiciary showed. I concentrated on the federal judiciary for the practical reason that it is the only national jurisdiction, so that every person in the U.S. is affected by what judges do. And what the wrongdoing in the federal judiciary is even more acute because most of the judges, that means the district judges, the circuit judges, and the justices of the Supreme Court have a life appointment. So they are there until they retire or they die. And a very telling statistic is that in the last 226 years, going back all the way to 1789, the number of federal judges that has been impeached and removed from the bench is 8. Now, on September the 30th, 2013, there were 2,217 federal judges on the bench. You can imagine that in the last 226 years, there must have been well over 10,000 federal judges, and only 8 have been impeached and removed. And that means that once you are nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate, become a judge or justice of the federal judiciary, you can do whatever you want in reliance on the fact that you will not be removed. And that is a frightening statistic, because just imagine what would happen to you if you were at work and your bosses could do whatever they want to you, take your property or your liberty and the rights and duties that determine your life, and get away with it without confronting any consequence, let alone losing their job.
So what Dr. Cordero, I'm sorry, yes, go ahead.
Yes, another very statistic, another very telling statistic is that in 1980, so 35 years ago, Congress adopted the Judicial Conduct and Disability Act that was intended for the first time ever to set up a system of rules that would allow anybody to complain about a federal judge. And the reason why Congress felt the need to do so was precisely because there was no system for complaining about judges. And so Congress recognized that that was a situation that induced unaccountability. The problem is that Congress allowed federal judges to exercise self-discipline, which means that they were the ones receiving the complaints and disposing of them. Well, the statistics that the federal courts have to submit every year under law, Congress show that 99.82% of complaints filed by people against the federal judges are dismissed. That is very, very close to 100% of all those complaints. In addition, 100% of motions to review those dismissals are denied. That means that, in effect, federal judges have abrogated of Congress was supposed to entitle the people, we the people, to complain about misconduct in the federal judiciary. That is compounded by the fact that if you go to the federal judiciary and you appeal in the circuit, so you have gone to the district court, you go to the circuit court, and then you appeal, almost 100% of all motions to review the decision of a panel of circuit judges is denied, which means that they cover for each other. Instead of the whole court reviewing what a panel of three circuit judges have decided in order to determine whether they decided it correctly or decided it wrongly or even wrongfully, they simply deny that type of internal check on the performance of each other. In the federal circuits, 52% of all appeals are filed by individuals, pro se, not by lawyers. So that is very important. How in the national jurisdiction, federal judges can do whatever they want, and ever more they do so to individuals, to people that are representing themselves and that have a very little knowledge about the complexity of the law and how to argue a case. It is not easy. In most of cases, people that represent themselves are overwhelmed, not only because of the problem that they have with another party, the opposing party, but also because of when they try to bring their cases to court, they find that it is incredibly difficult to do so. So they are on their own, and they are also easy prey. And the same happens in state courts, because the models for the judges in the courts at the state level is that of the federal judges and the federal judiciary. Now, in my study, what I found out was that there are four fundamental circumstances that enable judges' wrongdoing. The first one is pervasive secrecy. In the federal judiciary, all adjudicative decisions, which means when the judges meet to decide over a case, that is done in secrecy, not in public. When judges hold their administrative meetings, that is also done in secrecy. When they meet to decide and adopt policies for the federal judiciary, that is done also in secrecy. And of course, when they meet to decide on disciplinary measures to be taken against a fellow judge, that is done in secrecy. Now, imagine you that Congress held all its meetings in secrecy. Would you think that we would have, under those circumstances, a democracy? Of course not. We would have a state within the state. They decide whatever they want, and politicians that appoint, nominated, and confirmed to those judges will not turn around and investigate them, let alone incriminate and remove them. That's why only 8 of them have been impeached and removed. That means that on accountability, known by the politicians in Congress, is one of the circumstances that enable federal judges to engage in wrongdoing. The other circumstances, the third one, is the coordination between the judges. Because imagine you that you started doing something wrong and you get away with it. And the other judges see you doing that and benefiting from it. Wouldn't you say that they would think, well, why shouldn't I do the same thing since it is impossible to do so without any risk? And that is the fourth circumstance that enable wrongdoing in the federal judiciary as well as in the state judiciaries: risklessness. They do not have to fear paying any adverse consequence at all. Now, up to now, there have been several ways in which people have tried to complain about wrongdoing judges. The first one is by filing complaints, and in the federal judiciary, as I've mentioned before, it is by filing them with the judges themselves. So you have to file in the federal judiciary your complaint with the chief judge of the circuit, and he protects his fellow judges. It doesn't go anywhere except into dismissal and the denial of any motion to review the dismissal. So one way of complaining about judges is by filing complaint with them. Another way is by filing suit against them. That is a waste of time, precisely because the judges are not going to incriminate each other. Because if a judge that has done something wrong and has been allowed to do so by other judges were to incriminate each other, they all would go down. So they have to protect themselves. They have an interdependent survival. They mutually interdependent survival. They depend on each other to survive because they know too much about each other's wrongdoing. There are also some other ideas that have been tried and have been found to be useless. Another one is trying to file class action. Class actions are incredibly difficult to bring forward because the person who brings the class action cannot just represent the people that he or she knows. He has to find all the members that belong to that class in order to give them in writing the possibility to opt in or opt out, to decide whether they want you to represent them or they don't. And that means that you have to hire a company that will help you identify those of potential members of the class in order to give them that opportunity. And the communication itself costs some money. And maintaining those people aware of what is going on in your class action costs money. So a class action, to begin with, would have to count with about $500,000 in order to do so. But that is not the biggest hurdle. The biggest hurdle is who is going to represent the class, because you have to be certified as a attorney representing the class. It means that you have to convince the judge that you have the technical knowledge and the legal experience to represent a class. And if you are pro se, you can forget about being certified as the representative of the class. And it seems to me that it is quite understandable. I don't think that you would like to be represented in court by a pro se who doesn't know the law and who is trying to find it as he goes. That is not a way of complaining effectively against the judges. The same thing happens with RICO suits. That means racketeering influence and corrupt organizations. It is known as RICO. And RICO is a highly technical law that requires a lot of knowledge of what a racketeering enterprise means and how to prove it. The evidence that it has to bring forth in order to make a RICO case is very complex. It requires a lot of technical knowledge. A pro se cannot do that. And in addition, you also need a lot of money to do so. But it is useless, because if you bring a RICO action against the judges, you are still confronting the same problem that you have judges protecting their peers. So this means that an import approach to complaining about judges is useless, because you do not have the possibility of finding a fair and impartial judge. You're dealing with the peers, the friends, the colleagues of the judges that you are complaining about. That is a recipe for failure. And in fact, those are suits end in failure. So what I have proposed, and what I am proposing to you, is an out-of-court approach, where people use their knowledge of their own case and dealing with other people in order to show this element of coordinated wrongdoing. Why? Because if you try to approach, let's say, a journalist or even a court of appeals with only your case, and you try to argue that the judge in your case was engaged in wrongdoing, it is most likely that the judge is going to say, because you lost, you are now a disgruntled loser, and now you're blaming the judge for your own shortcomings. First, because you're a pro se and you do not know what you're talking about. And second, because you were not effective in making your case, because you had a bad case. So that is not an effective way of complaining about judges. You have to use a strategy of trying to get in touch with other victims of wrongdoing judges. There is a way. That is what I have found out by what I have termed strategic thinking. Trying to identify the interest of the people that you are dealing with in order to see whether those interests are harmonious with yours or are in conflict with yours, and thereby determine whether you have a fair chance of succeeding. We have already discussed that if you bring judges that you say have engaged in wrongdoing in front of other judges, their interests are harmonious. They want to help each other, because otherwise they bring each other down. So when you analyze a situation in that way, finding out whose interests will be advanced or will be frustrated by taking a certain action, you can determine in advance whether that course of action makes any sense or whether it is to failure. And instead of just doing what people have been doing for scores of years or even hundreds of years, you have to find a different way. Now, when we talk about harmonious interest, the most harmonious interest that you have as a pro se or even as a represented party is other victims of wrongdoing that have appeared before your own judge, the same judge presiding over your case. That would
Dr. Cordero,
Could I ask a quick question just to illustrate the strategic thinking? In New York, I did a little research, and what I discovered was that the unemployment rate for attorneys in New York is 40%. So that's pretty high. So I would think that even if you are a federal judge and you're sitting on the bench, and it looks like a pretty plum job, you know, you got a big salary, you got great benefits, if you lecture anyone, they're going to throw money at you. But I would think that you would have some natural enemies who couldn't wait to remove you from the bench because they want your job. So that's what you're trying to look at. Not only, you're trying to get people to think outside the box and being creative and seeing whose interests are harmonious with yours. So what you would want to do is identify the bad judges, do some research to find other victims, reach out to those other victims, gather your evidence, and then find out who would like to take that judge's job away from him. Is that what you're trying to get to?
Well, the problem of that is that you do not become a judge just by applying to become a judge. You have to be endorsed by a party. Here in New York, that is the way it works. So judges are endorsed by a party, and then they run under their heading, on their ticket. And if you are a lawyer, employed or unemployed, who does not have the connections to the party, you're not going to be endorsed. And forget about running as an independent. Because when was the last time, or even the first time, that you heard a judge or a person running in a judicial race make a speech, having a rally? That doesn't happen. That is not the way judges become judges. It is by being endorsed by a party. So even
let me interrupt. That's very good, because one of the things that Rob Kozowski advised, he's an attorney with the Nassau County Civic Association, and the listeners out there can Google the Nassau County Civic Association. One of the things that he advises is that people, this would probably speak to your trying to think outside the box strategic thinking, is start going to the party meetings, but not the party meetings, you know, where it's the knee-jerk reactions. It's start going, finding who the committee men are. The committee, like, if, for example, in New York, state judges run their elected positions. So start finding who the committee men are and start going to those meetings, whether it's Republican, Democrat, Tea Party, what have you. Start figuring out how these people get nominated and make yourself known as a presence in those meetings. But go ahead, Dr. Cordero.
Yes, well, that's a very difficult way of just replacing one single judge, and it is not going to be effective as to the judiciary. So the most that you can do that way is to replace a rogue judge, and when you get in, suppose that you replace that judge, you are going to be confronted with all the other judges that are going to make your life impossible, because you cannot just take on the other judges on your own. So trying to change the judiciary from within, whether it is as a party by filing suit against the judges, or whether it is by running as a judge and becoming a judge and trying to be a champion within the judiciary, those are inside in court ways that have been shown to be a failure. The way of trying to bring to the attention the wrongdoing of judges to the rest of the public is by organizing what eventually can become a court strike. That means that there are so many victims of one judge and victims of other judge in one court, that the parties and lawyers, they strike. And that is what would call the attention of judges. And that is possible. That is possible in other countries that has happened. But here, there is a way. And that is precisely what I have stated in the article on auditing judges. Auditing judges. It is on page OL:274. There is a detailed method for auditing judges. What that means is that, let's say you begin from the very beginning. You have experienced the wrongdoing of a judge. You do not want to confront the judge alone anymore, because you know that the judge can always prevail. There is no way you can force a judge to do the right thing. If that were possible, then the judge would not be a wrongdoing judge. It would be simply a judge that is incompetent. But even incompetent people do not do the right thing just because somebody asked them to do the right thing. So trying to get a judge, whether he's incompetent or whether he's a wrongdoing, to do the right thing is a contradiction in terms. And you do not want to confront the judge alone anymore. Obviously, you have to continue your case, because if you do not continue your case, you are going to lose by default. By not taking action in your case, by not filing a brief or answering a brief filed by the opposing party. But that is not a way that is promising at all. It doesn't take into account the harmonious interest of the people against you. The harmonious interest of other people with your interest is the other are the other victims of the same judge presiding over your case, and you can identify that very easily. One way is simply by going to the courthouse and going to the courtroom of that judge on a motion day. A motion day, usually there is one motion day per week. All the parties that have a motion that day are listed and posted on the outside of the courtroom. And there you have the name of the parties, you have the case number, and you have all other useful information for contacting those people. Somebody there have experienced the same abuse as you have, and they are more susceptible to your approach than any judge would be. So this is a very practical way of getting in touch with other people. There is a group in Washington State that did that, that put in practice of what I have suggested. Now, it takes only five people. You only have to find five people to get together and do what? Audit the judge. Now, what that means in practical terms is that you bring your papers, your files, your evidence, organized chronologically. It would be better if you put all that information on one single file, chronologically ordered, such as a PDF, a portable document format. And you can then, together with the other people, four or five, not an army, not 25 people. 25 people is simply a recipe for disaster. You're not going to get anything done. So you only have to find initially four or five people that say, yes, I am so disgusted with what I have seen in my case. And all these people organize their material, and then they come to a meeting. It can be to your house or to the backyard of somebody else's house, and they start looking for commonalities. That means names that are that appear in the same in several of those the cases of the several people that are there, and you started to try to find out what would be the interest of that person in being in so many cases. What can justify that, let's say, the same accountant or the same accounting firm has been appointed to do an accounting of the case. Let's say that it is in probate court or that it is in landlord-tenant court, and you try to find out the points that are in common. It can be an address, it can be dates. Some things that happened always on a Friday, like the dismissals happen on a Friday, and you start wondering whether it is because the judges on Friday want to get rid of their workload of motions, and then they deny them in batch. That means forget about it, all of them deny. And that is the best way of dismissing a case, because you do not change the status quo. The things remain as they were. The judge doesn't have to worry about anything. Deny, deny, deny. And you find then a pattern. There is no way a judge read all those own cases and then decide all of them on the same day. And when you went to the courtroom of that judge and went outside the courtroom, you may have seen that on one single motion day, a judge can have 30 or 40 cases. There is no way judges read those briefs. And in fact, when you appear before those judges, they have no clue what you are talking about, because they haven't had the opportunity nor the will to read your briefs. Since they know that they can simply dismiss those cases by using a bench form, on the bench, dispose of the case in less than 5 minutes by what you and the other party have argued, why would they spend hours trying to go through the briefs that you filed and the other briefs of the opposing party? And that is one of the main sources of wrongdoing. Judges who have not even read the briefs filed with them. Another way of finding other people that have appeared before the same judge is just by going to the internet. There are many courts that post the cases of a judge on the internet. And once you find the names of the parties and the case number, you can find also briefs that may have been uploaded to the website. Here in New York, there is the New York State Court's electronic filing system. And it is a wonderful tool to get from the convenience of your home access to all those cases and to the parties that have appeared before the same judge. So it is possible. The only barrier to implementing what I am telling you now is that you are used to doing things in a different way. So it is much easier always to keep doing what you have been doing and expecting a different result, which according to Einstein is the hallmark of irrationality. It is a failure to understand cause and effect. So just give it a your consideration to the plan that I am proposing, because then you can find coordinated wrongdoing. You start with a group of 5 people and you find something that at this point in time seems very suspicious. And then you start looking into the relationship of, let's say, that accountant, and you find that that accountant works in a firm where a partner is the wife of the judge. And you may see that in another case of an auctioneer, a person who auctions belongings of one of the parties, is related also to some relatives of the judge. And that is the way in which you start to connect those points of commonality into patterns of wrongdoing. That is what can persuade other people, particularly journalists, to think that it is worth their time and their risk to investigate a court. And that has a precedent. There is a Newsday study of judges in Nassau County, and it is simply extraordinary. The amount of research that these journalists conducted and the articles are so detailed, and they found out a system of kickbacks among judges. So much so that on the basis of the publication of their article, and you can look it up in my file, and I cite to that Newsday series of articles, the administrative judge began his own investigation of those judges. So it is possible. You can get that information together with other people so that you do not have to confront the judges on their own. You confront it together with other people. Now, imagine that you do that with five people, and then they branch out and get in touch with other five people. Eventually, you get in front in touch with people that have appeared before other judges in the same court, and then it is reasonable, it is feasible to join those people as well as lawyers in a court strike that would call the attention of the public and to wrongdoing that is coordinated among not only the judges but also insiders of the judicial system. That is possible and is much more promising than you just going it alone before a judge that is going to do whatever he wants because he knows that he is unaccountable. Now,
I have to agree with you. Can I just share a little anecdote with you? That's kind of what my little court watchers group does. And we went to court with Michael Kurchevsky. He hopes to join our program next week, where we will post in the chat room your study so people can read. The fact that judges don't read your briefs, they don't even read the lawyer's briefs. When we were in front of one of the judges in Michael Kurchevsky's case in Brooklyn, which is the second department, the judge sends out their law clerk on, you know, motion day. She's got a stack of paper that's from the briefs from both parties that's literally 3 feet high. And she's holding it in her arms. She comes out of the courtroom, sits, you know, outside in the hallway, and she says, "Tell me what this case is about." Because she has never read the briefs. The judge has never read the briefs. But she expects that in 3 minutes, Michael's going to talk about a stack of paper that's literally 3 feet high that took God knows how many man hours to produce. It is the most unconscionable. Can you imagine if you had a job where you could go to work and they would, like you said, on a motion day, the judge is dismissing 50 cases because he's never read the briefs? I mean, this is unconscionable. So what Dr. Cordero is telling us to help us think outside the box is huge. So I just wanted to share that. We can go a little longer if you want. Can I just ask for a little input from the person at 808? Would you like to offer a comment or an observation? Because I know you've been waiting patiently. Hello?
Yes. Well, I was going to talk about the older way of getting in touch with the national public, taking advantage of a presidential candidate's desperate need to get electoral support from the public. And just as we have found that there are so many processes in the federal judiciary, I mentioned that 52% of appeals to the circuit courts are brought by processes of the similar must be happening in the state courts. So there is a huge untapped voting block of people that are dissatisfied with the judicial and legal systems, and they constitute a block that presidential candidates would like to access. Now, why would presidential candidates want to take on judges that are in the federal judiciary there for life? Because those presidential candidates are desperate. You have seen how people in the Republican Party, where there have been many more candidates than in the Democrat side, they have gone on up and down. Last, only 2 weeks ago, Dr. Carson was at the top, and he had replaced briefly Mr. Trump, and now he is falling into almost single digits. He has a lot of support, by some estimates about a third of his support, and you see that other people that were very close at the top, like Jeb Bush, also have gone into single digits. Well, what that means is that those are people are desperate to get electoral support. And the point is not whether you are in favor of one person or the other. I am non-partisan. I think that Republicans and Democrats are equally to blame for having allowed the judges to become unaccountable, because it suits them, because those judges have been nominated, endorsed, and confirmed by Republicans and Democrats. So those judges are their judges, and they protect them at the expense of the interest of we, the people. So the point is not whether you favor one person or the other. The point is to be disciplined enough to understand what is the priority. The priority is to bring the issue of wrongdoing judges to the attention of the national public in order to outrage the public, so that the public will force the presidential candidates to take a stand on the issue. And then also a direct way of networking your way to contact the campaigns of presidential candidates to try to make a presentation before the top officers of the campaign, hopefully the chief of staff. And if they decide that it is worth the time of their respective candidates, then a presentation can be made before the candidate. But that is a much more promising and reasonable way. You have seen how in the last 2 weeks since the Bernardino shooting, the issue of allowing Muslims into the country or not allowing them, and the issue of combating terrorism has shot up to the top of the issues of the campaign. And every candidate, and even the new Speaker of the House, as well as the Chairman of the Republican Party, have had to take a stand on the issue. Well, the same would happen if the people were aware of the wrongdoing of federal judges. And instead of just thinking that, well, how we are going to do that? That is impossible. There are 2,217 federal judges. How are we going to present the wrongdoing of all of them? Well, obviously, that would be a disaster. You have to be focused. That's why in my study, I have identified two unique national stories involving a justice of the Supreme Court nominated by the president. And that justice is Justice Sotomayor at the time when she was nominated by President Obama in 2009, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Politico ran a series of articles suspecting them of concealment of assets. I have gathered the articles, and you can find the link to them on page JUR 65. The footnote is 107. You do not have to believe me. You do not know me. I am not asking you to trust me. I am asking you to do your homework of checking that evidence, going to the sources of information, and then think strategically. That type of unique national story involving a justice of the Supreme Court can interest the journalists of all sorts, that mean at the bottom of the industry, maybe students of journalism, because they have to do research and writing of stories in order to do their course. That is how journalism is taught in American journalism schools, by doing. And that would be a story that would interest them, because it can make them the people that brought to light a major scandal. There are also hundreds of new digital news outlets on the internet, and they too can be interested in pursuing that story that is based not only on the articles of the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Politico, but also on the very financial statements that then Judge Sotomayor submitted under oath to the Senate Committee on Judicial Nominations. I tabulated all the financial figures in those papers. I linked every figure to the document where I found it, and then found that there was $3.6 million unaccounted for. And you have to ask, where did the money go? Because once you earn the money is converted into something. It is converted into cars or real estate or yachts or boats or something. But it cannot just disappear. It cannot just be unaccounted for. Now, the investigation of Justice Sotomayor would be only a Trojan horse, because it would lead journalists, whether they are professional journalists or citizen journalists, to investigate how it is possible that a judge and a justice that have to file annually the financial disclosure reports could have not accounted for the money that she has earned. And then that would lead into the system of coordination within the federal judiciary that allows that to happen. So it is not just investigating one justice, but rather to investigate the judiciary, the federal judiciary. And it seems that to me that there are many things that can outrage the American public. But one that can do so most intensely is that people don't pay their taxes, that they are tax cheats, and in addition, that then when you appear before them, they force you to pay your taxes and force you to obey the law. The hypocrisy of concealing assets is something that would outrage the American public like no other failure of judges. So what I am proposing is that you think outside the traditional tried and failed ways of complaining about judges. What we want to do is to expose the wrongdoing of judges, but on the basis of evidence, not on the basis of wishful thinking or irresponsible claims or throwing all judges into the same situation, but rather to be very professional, very specific in what we do. That's why I am trying to gather a group of professionals and people with a professional attitude to investigate this and to approach the presidential campaigns in order to try to offer them something. Instead of we going to them with our hands stretched out to ask them for help for our individual cases, we approach them as business people with a proposition for them to benefit from this huge untapped voting bloc. They will do so in their own electoral interest, but in doing so, they will expose the issue. They can turn the issue into a decisive one of election 2016. And they can do so by providing the evidence that I have gathered and the evidence that they will gather on their own and the evidence that the journalists may find through more investigation at a conference, at a press conference. And you have the evidence that when Trump makes a statement, it gets coverage on all national media. So it is an effective way. You do not have to wait for something to develop little by little when it is a presidential candidate that makes the announcement. So it is a reasonable way of exposing judicial wrongdoing by approaching a presidential candidate and offering them to expose the evidence that we have gathered in their own interest. Forget about us. We are going to benefit indirectly, even unwittingly on the part of the candidates, if they present that evidence. And at the same time as we do that, then you can also pursue a different approach in your case by trying to join with other people that are in your same situation of being a victim of the same judge, of being a victim in the same court, and with lawyers, because not all lawyers are equal. Some lawyers are connected, and most lawyers are not connected. That means that, as always, in fraud, in order to benefit from fraud, only a few people can benefit from it. Fraud is not a means of distributing benefits. It is a means of getting benefits from the most into the hands of the few. So there are many lawyers there that would not openly accuse lawyers of engaging in wrongdoing, because that would be a death a warrant for their profession. They would never again win a motion, or their motions will be outdated, postdated, or backdated to their detriment. But they can help you. They can help you confidentially. They can help your group. And eventually, they can organize other lawyers together with victims and lead to this court strike that would be the most effective way of bringing the issue of wrongdoing in a court to the attention of the public. And then you can think progressively that the same thing would happen in other courts. Let's say that you begin in landlord-tenant court and then it moves up to family court and to other courts in the city and to other courts in the state. And don't think for a second that I am engaging in wishful thinking, because you know the precedent and model of what I'm doing, of what I'm saying, and that is the Tea Party. The Tea Party began some 15 years ago or so, and in 10 years, it dominated the national politics, because they were focused. They simply concerned themselves with one single issue, taxes. That's already enough already. That is what tea stands for, apart from its relationship to the Boston Tea Party. And we can do exactly the same thing. We can be so single-mindedly concerned with the issue of exposing wrongdoing, judicial wrongdoing. Forget about other issues. They may be important. It may be important to go against bar associations. It may be important to go against homeowners' associations. But will that attract the attention of journalists if it hasn't up to now? Will that mobilize the public because it will outrage the public in a way that will stir it up to take action now, not in 2 years' time? Now, we need action to take place while presidential candidates are desperate to get electoral support. And the best way of doing that is by being focused on one single issue, having strategy that is reasonable, based on facts and evidence, not on wishful thinking, not on tried and failed ways of just complaining about the judges. What we wanted to do is to expose specific wrongdoing, and that will be possible through these two unique national stories. You will find them more in detail if you go to page OL 191, and you see their section A and B, and you will see that it appeals to reason, that it is based on evidence, that we can develop this if we work in an organized way that is very focused, and that we realize that time is of the essence, because in less than now 50 days, the Iowa caucus is going to take place, and it will whittle down the number of candidates that can survive. Why? Because those that place up poorly in the Iowa caucus will not receive donations. People will not volunteer their work. Without volunteers, our campaigns cannot be run. People will not talk to each other at the water cooler about the candidate that they like, if it is the one that plays out poorly. And above all, people won't attend the rallies of people that plays so poorly that they simply disappear. They showed by the caucus in Iowa that they do not have any traction. So many of those candidates will fall away. We need to access them while they are desperate to get attention, to make a bleep in the news, because without journalists, candidates cannot survive. If candidates do not receive news media coverage, they cannot survive. They have then to get access to people on their own dime, and that is very expensive, and the only way they get the dime is through donations. So it is an interconnected way in which politics works, and we need to be very much aware of politics in connection to exposing wrongdoing judges. It is not that now we are going to do to engage in campaigning for one candidate or the other. It is simply that we think strategically and we take into account the circumstances of the real world, of the world that we live right now, and then we use it to advance our interest in exposing wrongdoing of judges and leading eventually to judicial reform. And judicial reform is when people, we the people, become again the masters of government, not of men and women, but by the rule of law, which means that we are the masters of all the public servants, including judicial public servants, that means judges. And we have to assert our authority to hold them accountable, because they are our servants. They cannot arrogate to themselves the position above the law. They are still our servants. And the only way we assert that status of masters of our government is by uniting. Only the national public has the power to expose wrongdoing judges, to force what we want to get as our objective, which is to get the presidential candidates to denounce at a press conference judicial wrongdoing on the basis of evidence already available, to make the issue of wrongdoing judges an issue of the primaries of the National Convention next year by September or so, and then of the presidential campaign, when the two nominees will be competing for every single vote that they can. And you remember what happened in 2000 in Florida, every single vote counted. So if we bring to the attention of presidential candidates this huge untapped voting block of persons that are dissatisfied with the judicial and legal system, we have something of value to offer them. And we have to pursue in a very focused way, as a single issue, this issue of exposing wrongdoing judges. And then we can do that. We can form then a national movement that is very similar to a Tea Party. It is not wishful thinking. It is strategic thinking. And we can do so if we work together. So what I am trying to encourage you to do is to read as much as you can of my study of judges and the judiciary. Check the sources. There are hundreds and hundreds of sources there that you can check. Knowledge is a power. You study that. Instead of just complaining and whining about the judge that abused you, you use that knowledge that I have gathered through professional research and made available to everybody, and you can use it in a very organized way. You can ask Ms. Radin to continue holding this type of presentations. You can ask other radio and TV talk show hosts to allow me to make a presentation of this issue. You can talk to schools of law, journalism, information technology, and business to allow me to present that evidence. And if you go to my study, you will see why those schools would have an interest in using their professional skills to investigate the area of their competence concerning wrongdoing judges. So there are ways in which you can work on your case together with other victims. And also you can work on parallel to that in a much broader approach to try to bring the issue to the attention of the national public, obviously of journalists, to the extent that you can, but it is most likely that it will begin with a series of presentations where people will try to foster their own interests. That is an element, a key element of strategic thinking, that we try to advance the interest of the people that we are talking to. Instead of asking them to help us, we say, we can help you. And we clearly tell them, and we do that not because we are sisters and brothers of Mother Teresa of Calcutta and St. Francis of Assisi. It's not because we are selfless. It is because we understand that if you advance your interest indirectly, you will advance ours. And ours is to expose effectively wrongdoing judges and lead them to judicial reform. So you can ask other talk show hosts and bring to the attention of them the possibility, the real possibility, that if they concentrate on this single issue of exposing judicial wrongdoing, that they can form a coalition of radio and TV talk show hosts and become a powerhouse in American politics. And that is possible. The same way that right now you cannot avoid the influence of the national networks, that means NBC, ABC, and CBS, the same way we can try to form talk show hosts into another network that will concentrate on one single issue. Instead of dispersing the attention of people with a myriad of issues, one day a week, every talk show host brings this issue. They liaise with other talk show hosts, and we coordinate them into forming a coalition that then brings to the attention of the public the nature, the extent, and the gravity of judicial wrongdoing. And by doing so, it is possible to turn the talk show hosts into a powerhouse of American politics. It is a realistic way of proceeding. Instead of wasting our efforts in the traditional tried and failed ways, we are going now to think strategically and to proceed in a different way. And we can do so. I'm not telling you that we are going to be successful, because that would be wishful thinking. That would be promising something to you that I cannot promise at all. If it were easy to expose wrongdoing judges, it would have been done already in more than 226 years. In more than that, why? Because even the founding fathers discussed of in the papers that they wrote at the time, around the time of drafting the Constitution, the importance of judges, how they could also become a dominant center of power in the country, just as they did the same thing about banks. And that's why we have so many banks in our country, because they do not want to allow concentration of power into the hands of some banks. And the same thing has happened, nevertheless, in judges, because judges are the most powerful public officials in our country, particularly those in the federal judiciary. Why? Because one single federal judge can declare unconstitutional what 545 members of Congress and the president have discussed, adopted, and signed into law. And they are there for life. Whereas members of the House only have a puny two-year mandate, and the senators only 6 years, and the president only 4. So This is something so important that it is possible, it is realistic to become a dominant issue of the primaries, the nominating convention, and the presidential campaign. It is within the realm of realities that we bring this to the attention of the national public. But in order to do so, we have to think strategically, concentrate on a single issue, and then move to allow these presentations to happen in as many places as possible, and do so aware of the fact that time is of the essence, that we need to bring this issue to presidential candidates while they are desperate to tap on this huge voting block.